study session of the City Council to order at 5:30. First, I would like to ask if there are any changes to the meeting agenda for tonight. Anyone have a Mr. Walker?
Yes, Madam Mayor. Withdrawing bill number 9272.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay, we will do it formally up there. Okay, now we move on the agenda. Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of council. This evening, we have the opportunity to hear from the Washington University Advisory Committee. I believe that Mr. Nelling is going to do a presentation, and he has members of his committee here as well. So I will turn it over to Mr. Nelling.
Of course. Gary Nelling, 850 Warder Avenue of the University City, and co-chair of the University City Washington U Advisory Committee, here to present the report on the research and study we did about the impact of the tax-exempt property owned by Washington U in University City. And I want to first note that, the advisory committee, as I'm sure most of you know, was chosen by the mayor and all six city council members, two committee members apiece. And we are of very different backgrounds. There are three architects, two real estate professionals, some MBAs, some teachers, a professor of political science and public policy, and probably a professor or two I'm forgetting. But so it was a pretty broad spectrum of backgrounds and of selection. And most of us were not familiar with this particular piece of type of public policy and financing beforehand, so I think you get a fairly impartial group putting this together. The mandated topics from your resolution 2014-3 there were seven of them, and we aggregated them into five subcommittees because there were some where the topics were very, very similar. And they would be, the first was how much revenue is lost to University City taxing entities because of the tax-exempt status of Washington University properties. Items two and three were, what does Washington University provide to University City taxing entities, and what does Washington U provide to University City taxing entities that can be measured in dollars? We aggregated that into Subcommittee 2. The fourth and fifth topics, what in-kind services does Washington U provide to University City taxing entities, and are there intangibles that Washington U supplies to University City taxing entities, were joined into Subcommittee 3. The sixth was how does University City taxing entities' relationship with Washington University compare with the relationships of comparable universities who have large tax-exempt property holdings such as Brown University, Northwestern, Rutgers, Yale University, etc. And the last, which became Subcommittee 5, was is there any way to quantify the amount of increased demand on city services that result from Washington University's ownership and development of tax-exempt property? Now, to this I will add from that resolution a statement that that we were requested to look at impacts on and mitigation of the following: public safety resources, additional public works resources, additional capital infrastructure improvements, parks, parking resources, revenue responsibility, and quality of life issues. So, you know, I'll point out that all of the topics that were asked of us included the phrase taxing entities. The primary focus of this was things that were quantifiable that have an impact on all of University City taxing entities. However, the nature of this also was that we wanted to look at and think about the general impact on the culture and of University City. So the strategy was therefore both primarily tangible, quantifiable tax impact, but also some discussion of broader impact. The one of the first thing we did therefore was to invite Washington University to make a presentation to us and tell us what they considered to be contributions to the city, and they did so in a presentation and a document called By the Numbers, Washington University Contributions to University City. And to briefly enumerate these, I summed them up so it's not too long a list. This includes, first, Washington U expenses to their faculty and staff payroll in University City, 313 people who live there, and receive approximately $35 million a year in income. Undergraduate student spending of about $8 million. Taxes and fees over in 2012 through 2014, which would be 3 years, of $341,000 or $114,000 roughly per year, for a total per year expense of about $43 million, $114,000. The next group was investments in University City from Washington U. These include their employer-assisted housing, 27 loans of about $4,000 each for closing costs for people who would buy homes in University City, employees that would buy homes in University City in the northern part of our city. And that totals about $109,000. There were public projects such as the new sidewalks around university property, some park improvements, bike paths, and the like, some street lighting and so on, totaling $3,600,000 or about $270,000 a year. Community investments, the fire station land, the trolley plan, a variety of those things were $3 million or about $327,000 a year. This is all, by the way, enumerated in the report, so you can look at it in greater detail. And I'll, you know, point you to and direct toward that as we go. Safety and security resources, primarily the blue light call box system of $2,200,000. And the biggest numbers of all, then, the new construction of the lofts at University City for about $69 million, and that's a completed project cost, and building renovations on the apartments of $32,600,000, and parallel properties maintenance improvements of about $16,100,000. Parallel properties and Quadrangle being a private a division with private ownership of Washington U, where they do pay real estate taxes on that. The total of that's about $130 million, and this averages about 10 or 11 years. Some of these are expenses over 4 years, some over 11 years, some over 14 years or 15 years. So it averages about 10 or 11 years. There are also then contributions to UCity in terms of the UCity schools, a middle school partnership that was valued at $100,000, volunteer hours in the schools of 200,000 hours, public improvements to the Forsyth parking lot. There are meter revenues that I understand that we receive that are worth about $24,000 a year. Community investments, the new fire station land and the $1 per year lease, Parkview Gardens plan, loop trolley, et cetera, some amounts in the $50,000 and $25,000 range. And then the safety and security, a cash contribution to the UCity Police of $90,000 a year. The total cash contributions in 1 year are averaging recently about $114,000, and other one-time contributions of about $184,000. Now, from that, we said, what else do we need to know about Washington University financially in University City? And this came partially from the numbers, it came partially from their website, and partially from an annual report of their income and asset status. From this, we learned Washington U currently owns 1.2 million square feet of residential and commercial property in University City and is our largest landholder. The Washington U total portfolio of residential and commercial property had a market value in 2014 of about $120 million, which will rise by another $20 to $23 million by the time of the Phase 2 lofts completion. Now, an interesting corollary between these two is that if you have $120 million of property and 1.2 million square feet of building, it's a fairly simple calculation to see that these are being relatively conservatively valued at about $100 a square foot. The loss construction is considerably more than that. The market value of the apartments probably is in that $100 range. But so it's a kind of check, if you will, against the calculations that we make later on. The properties, the Washington U nonprofit properties, equal about 3.8 to 4.5% of the assessor's $2.88 billion appraised value of all taxable property in University City. At the completion of the lofts, phase two, that should rise to about 5.3%. In addition, we note that Washington U currently provides 70% of their students with on-campus housing. I believe that's all in the South 40, though there may be other locations. It's been a long while since I've walked it off. And the remaining 30% in University City, St. Louis, and Clayton. Now, we also have the number of Washington U students in University City is 2,840, roughly half of which, 1,400, live in the Washington U-owned nonprofit tax-exempt properties, and the other half in private apartments currently. So Washington U is a school with 14,100 students, and so we see that the students living in the tax-exempt apartments represent about 10% of the total Washington U student population, both undergraduate and graduate, and the total living in both the tax-exempt apartments and the taxable privately owned apartments is about twice that, about 20%, meaning that there's only 10% left that's elsewhere in St. Louis or Clayton or other locations, Richmond Heights, so on. Now, with all this in hand, we said, how are we going to look at these things? What do we assign these amounts that we have learned from Washington U and from other sources? Well, they're really all from Washington U sources. And the committee concluded that we wanted to categorize these things. First was that Washington U contributions that benefit University City exclusively should be given full value. That seems obvious. The $90,000 of contribution to the University City Police, the $24,000 assigned to from the meters are clearly full value contributions. Where there are contributions, and this includes it's a general word, including the expenses and investments that are shared benefits between the university and ourselves, we would give that a 50-50 value. And then benefits that accrue to more municipalities than just University City would be apportioned appropriately. So the shared benefits would be things like the infrastructure items I mentioned, sidewalks and lighting and so on, used both by students and by people that live in the area. An example of the apportionment according to the different metropolitan areas would be the loop trolley study, which about 25% of the loop is in University City and 75% in St. Louis. And so, we valued that portion at 25%. We also said that then if there any of these things were strictly for Washington U's benefit, then that would not be valued as a contribution. So the things that fall in that category. When I say that, I'm talking about tangible things, things that would fall to the bottom line of taxing entities. These would include the new lofts construction, the renovation of the apartments, and so on, because they are Washington U assets. Now, there's clearly intangible asset value to having them here. You have a better neighborhood when you have fully improved apartment buildings rather than ones with basic maintenance. You have a better, a more vibrant neighborhood when you have some modern architecture as well as the historic architecture in the loop and so on. These things are clear, but your charge to us was taxing entities, so that's most of our focus. When I make a statement like that, that's what I'm referring to. We said expenses for permits, other taxes paid and so on by Washington University are not a contribution. When you're paying part of when you're paying the taxes that you're obliged to, you're paying taxes. It's an exchange of service. The city is doing services. The people are paying the taxes and so on. So it's a valuable thing within the city, but not a contribution against lost resources, against the lost nonprofit tax exempt. It's such a long phrase. I have to each time, you know. Anyway, the nonprofit tax exempt real estate tax taxes. So we also determined that things like there was discussions with people in the schools and about the nature of all the hours they contribute, which are sizable, and which the school readily said these have value. And even going back as far as when my kids were in Jackson Park, I remember a couple kids working with us on total quality schools, and this was definitely a useful thing. But in terms of the schools as taxing entities, they said, you know, we can't have fewer teachers because the students are here. They're here completing their studies, doing something of value to us. We're of value to them. It's kind of a balance. So that was the – and anything else? No. So that was the way we looked at all of these things as expenses, as investments, as contributions, and distinguishing they all have certain kinds of value, but the tangible financial value being those that really go to someone's bottom line. So the next we have those were our findings, by the way. Our recommendations then become as follows. We acknowledge here that University City benefits in intangible ways from Washington U as a neighbor. Their faculty and staff live here. It's part of our economy. The campus is certain parts of it are available. The nice new Kemper Art Museum, you know, I go to every chance I get. These are all good things. The enhancement of community value by their presence is not questionable. The alternatively, though, University City, Washington U benefits from the proximity to University City, a totally unique, beautiful, historic city with value to them by our presence and our quality. In other words, when people are thinking about buying a house in University City, it certainly does not hurt to have Washington U as a neighbor. When people are thinking about sending their young high school students' children to Washington U, it does not hurt to have this lovely community next to them. So we saw that as a kind of shared benefit that we really want to acknowledge, but not necessarily one that goes to the bottom line of the taxing entities. Now we did in the recommendation say that University City does bear some additional burden from the growing amount of tax exempt property within the borders of our city, contributing to some relatively high property taxes. There are 12 municipalities in St. Louis County that collect no property taxes. Of the 78 that do, municipalities that do, University City was 19th highest with a tax rate of 0.730. Now, I have heard and read in Dr. Kraft's report and elsewhere, maybe in yours, that we have a lower rate this year. There has been some appreciation of property values in University City that is helping to mitigate this situation. And this is due to really a couple of things. One is that coming out of the housing and credit crisis of 2008 and 2009, when property values around the nation dropped precipitously, though interestingly enough, not quite so much in the St. Louis metropolitan area, we have always been not as exciting, but more stable. But they did come down significantly, and you can see that there is an illustration in Christine Albinson's Subcommittee 3 that will show you the property tax revenues in 2006, 8, 10 that came up from 5.2 to 5.8 million, towed down to in the 3 something million, and are beginning to approach where we were before. So that is, you know, we want to acknowledge that is a good thing. But it also, depending on the future of Parkview Gardens and the other areas where there are the Washington New apartment buildings, if they continue to come offline as property values are rising, then it has also a greater negative impact if they come off. So that is an important consideration in your own policy and thinking about this. The main rationale for having tax exempt status for charities in the beginning, the reason we have that is because these perform services that otherwise a community might have to spend money on, and therefore their income from donations or from services given is tax exempt. That was also more true of universities in. Previously and historically, Washington U was a street, University City, a streetcar suburb, Washington U a streetcar university. Most of the people came from St. Louis, University City, stayed here, and so therefore educating and training these students and sending them back in the community had a little bit different impact from when they now mostly graduate and move elsewhere for jobs. And this is not, you know, it is not within anyone's purview to change those kind of tax-exempt rules. Just an acknowledgement that the motivation for a university to invest in their community is somewhat different at this time than it may have been historically. Many universities around the nation have recognized that their well-being is wrapped up with their host communities and that they often impose service burdens on them, and that revenue deficiencies can impact those city services, especially city streets, parking, sidewalks, and so on. And many have come to realize they can intentionally deploy some of their resources to benefit their host and neighboring communities while at the same time benefiting themselves. It's an extension of this original statement about the synergy of our proximities, that it does them no good if our city services are stretched and they are trying to provide their students with safe, amenable places to live and attract more of them. There can be synergies to providing some additional money or in-kind services. So in the recommendations, we concluded there are basically four ways University City can cope with any ongoing fiscal squeeze. And that could be, there's raised taxes, there's cut services, there is receive some additional payments or in-kind services from Washington University, and or expand the tax base through economic development and investment. And I'll stop here and say that the report taken in its total does not suggest this is entirely Washington University's responsibility. Their primary mission is education, and they're doing what they need to do. And we have our own mission of enhancing the economy of University City. But that there are a number of city-university relationships around the country where they work together on these items. Therefore, the recommendations And this is culled from all five subcommittees, though I will go through some of these and look at them individually. But the first recommendation was to negotiate a pilot. Now, Washington U is already contributing the $114,000 that I mentioned. And I don't know that there's any formal name for this, but pilot, meaning payment in lieu of taxes, are voluntary agreements between a city and a university for contributions that would help mitigate the loss in tax-exempt real estate taxes. And so they are already doing this. The contribution of the $114,000 is about 6% of the lost real estate tax revenue, which is about average for what most other universities involved in these programs do. So it's not an insubstantial sum. But there are many other in-kind services that I will address shortly. The second thing was about collaboration to spur private development. Now, what we recommended is kind of twofold, that the city, using its community development department, real estate developers, agents, business owners, and residents, can create meaningful plans to stimulate economic growth and real estate development. And I will be looking forward to the comprehensive plan to see how that's addressed, because I know that's one particular topic, something dear to my heart. But many cities collaborate. You know, we have a brain trust, in effect, Washington University, right on our doorstep and as our neighbor, and there may be places where they can help in either finance or kinds of planning to make those things possible. In particular, I think that because the North Campus, their new North Campus, is so near the northern part of our city, where we do have some low-income people and challenges, it would be a wonderful resource to have some counseling and job counseling and other type of things that would help all those people realize their goals. The third recommendation was potential negotiations of transfers of real property. You often have situations where a university has a piece of property that, because of its size or location, cannot be well utilized by them, and the same of a city. And sometimes swaps are made. Sometimes instead of cash payments, a piece of property that could be deeded to the city and then used for private development. This has happened in certain universities. There have been Brown use of university. There was a transfer where some streets that were vacated by the city and given to them for purposes they needed, and so on. So that's one thing to look into. The sixth was zoning law. This both meant both application of zoning law that helps development, that induces new investment in the city and in such a way that it's amenable to the existing environment and works with existing environment. But it also means that in certain cities there have been zoning restrictions put on universities as far as where they can expand and how. In Webster Groves, they recently passed it's an educational zoning district for Webster University, the seminary and the private school there, and because of input from residents who felt that there was too much conditional use spot zoning going on, some of this being too dense or noisy or too much parking in a residential area, then their plan commission drew up a plan which their city council passed, and there is now an educational zoning district that limits. There is still room for growth within it, but it limits Webster University, to that area. And not necessarily saying that this is a card you would want to play at this point, but we want you to be aware of it and know that is a card you could potentially play in any negotiation with Washington U. Parking issues, we know there are in especially in Parkview Gardens, that there's a walking plan and there's a shuttle bus. I'm not sure if they go to all the buildings that have been improved or added. But we felt that it was important to designate a certain amount of parking for the permanent residents and the to make sure that shoppers and people going to dining in the Loop and so on, that there was sufficient parking for them. And since most Washington U students, especially if they're undergraduate, tend to walk anyway, codifying that to some degree so that there was sufficient parking for both was an important thing that we would like to do, like to see. The seventh was transparency, which and all we mean by that is just asking Washington U what their intentions are over the next 10 years, which are what you asked us to look at. They made statements in the newspaper a couple years ago about only acquiring buildings in Parkview for another three years, it would stop, but it didn't really go beyond that. So for you all to make plans about the future economic development, what is private, what's public, what your tax revenues would be, it would certainly be hopeful if they can kind of lay out their game plan with you. And the last is the IBA Heidelberg model. In Heidelberg, Germany, the city of Heidelberg and the University of Heidelberg entered into a cooperative agreement in 2012 to make facilities available on campus for all kind of private, both individuals, groups, businesses, and so on. As well as having tech incubators and new business incubators and shared research. There is university and private research happening together. And obviously, it's a different country, a different culture and politics, having a private, the state-owned University of Heidelberg in cooperation with the city, but other American universities attended a symposium which was called the International Bauausstellung, or the International Building Exhibition, which they do yearly in different cities, and use that as a place for people to come together and explore these possibilities. And Stanford, Harvard, and Yale were there and took away some new ideas from this and are implementing some things that come from that. Okay, so in the five subcommittee reports, I do want to jump into the middle of this with some other financial facts that I think are relevant. And I should be looking at how much. Oh, there's the clock. Okay. All right, I'm almost on schedule here. In subcommittee report four, which was David Whiteman, Kristen Sabatka. There's a subsection that Christine Albinson and I worked on about comparable university pilots and civic contributions from looking at Washington U and some other universities where there was good documentation about their programs and contributions. As I mentioned, the Washington U $114,000 cash. Well, I'm sorry. Let me back up and say these universities were chosen for comparison partially because we had good information, but partially because several of them, Yale and Harvard in particular, had certain similarities in scale. Washington U is 14,100 students. Yale is 12,200. Harvard is 21,200. These are not the biggest universities. Boston University, which is also private, is about 30,000 students. But in these, one of the study reference guides we used, which was the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy, which is the most comprehensive that looks at pilot programs, both cash and in-kind services around the country. These were universities that they had followed and have continued to. There's been an update from the original original document that we received that was written several years ago. And so in that, they pointed out that the basis for negotiating pilot programs or other kind of compensation for the tax exempt revenue was not just on the lost revenue itself, but the extent of land holdings or building holdings, the amount of students, other kind of income or asset considerations. And so we said, let's see how we compare with these universities we have information on. And the 114,000 in cash equates to 6.1% of nonprofit real estate tax revenue and 0.16% of the total U-City taxing entity revenue. And by that, I mean the city and the library and school. And $760 per Washington U nonprofit acre in University City. And divide the 114,000 by 1,400 students, and you have $81 a student. Boston is has a $6 million pilot, but they have all of their property in Boston, so the per loss revenue is not that different from Washington U until you add in another $6.5 million of cash contributions that they make for a variety of programs which have tangible benefit to the city of Boston. And then you get about a 10.5% of lost revenue figure for Boston University. On an area basis, $6 million divided by their 350 acres is about $17,250 an acre. And divided by 30,000 students is $200 a student. Yale is, as I said, similar student population. In New Haven, which is also a small city, albeit really three and a half times as big as University City, so it's this as close as we could get. but nonetheless, they have, and they the majority of their acreage, 930 acres, is in New Haven, with the remainder that adds up to 1,100 acres in West Orange and West Haven. So they have 85% of their property in New Haven. Just on a lost real estate revenue basis for 2013, is that the most? No, the most recent, 2014, Yale had $8,300,000, which equals 6.9% of lost exempt real estate tax. So a little, round, let's call it 7%, a little higher than Washington U. In some previous years, like 2013, it was higher at 7.9%. But the $8,300,000 divided by the 930 acres is $8,900 an acre, and the $8,300,000 divided by 12,200 students is $680 a student. So you get different pictures of with these different metrics. As I said, Washington U makes is on par with a lot of medium-sized colleges and universities. But when we get into this tier of the Ivy Leagues and the most prestigious schools, of which Washington U in many ways belongs by virtue of the quality of their education, and frankly their endowment too. They have about $9 billion currently, which is $2 billion of real estate and about $7 billion of various kinds of marketable assets, compared to Yale at $24 billion and Harvard at $36 billion. So clearly, Yale and Harvard are at the very top of their tier. But there are but Washington, even when I went there, we called it the Harvard of the Midwest, and so it at this point it probably is. And therefore, maybe some additional sense of responsibility and connectivity with the community is appropriate. Harvard was for 2014 is let's see, what do I want to say here? Now, this is interesting because Harvard, like university, like Washington University, is located in three cities in the Boston area, that being Cambridge primarily, Boston secondarily, where they have their medical school and a lot of sports facilities, and then the little town of Waterton, Massachusetts, kind of upriver from that, where they bought a 40-acre complex of office buildings, commercial buildings, retail, and so on, and on 40 acres. I don't know the square footage of this, but it's about 8 or 9 buildings. They tend to be three-story renovations and so on. I'm guessing 500,000 square feet or more. And they're currently paying Waterton $4.9 million for lost income, lost real estate tax revenue.
Like what?
So just compare 6%.
Well, okay. I guess the point I want to make with this is that there are different metrics by which the cities and universities have measured what they consider a reasonable contribution, and they vary. So there's no one clear metric or group of them to choose, but it gives you an image of the scale and scope of all this. The last part with reference to Yale that I find very interesting is that they're in kind services, the cash value of the tangible cash value of in-kind services is really substantial from Yale to New Haven. They have a program called New Haven Promise in which any high school student in New Haven can come and attend classes for free or I think it's all for free. But anyway, at their classes throughout the year, in the summers, for those students, there is a scholarship program for any low-income student who shows, you know, seriousness about their study. They can get a substantial scholarship to go to not just Yale, but any college or university in Connecticut. They have a... Yeah.
We need to move on to talk about the services and the actual lost revenue to the university.
Ah, yes. Well, all right. Let me get to that before time runs out. Okay. I'm sorry. I was saving that for last. The impact on the lost revenue was calculated to be about $1.6 million per year. Currently rising to about $2.16 million per year by the end of the completion of the lofts. This was done based on a detailed analysis in Subcommittee 1 that looked at appraisers' assessed values, appraisers' appraised values, appraisers' assessed values, and then market assessed values, and used an income model to determine the current value of the buildings that are already nonprofit. How much would we lose? How are we losing if they were still privately owned? And it is an income model they use to do that, which you can see in great detail because it's calculated per each building, and the net effect of that is somewhere in the $1.9 to $2.1 million range currently. In Subcommittee 5, the calculation there was about the cost of services and to the 1,400 students that live in the tax-exempt property. That was calculated by taking the total cost of the services dividing by a per capita rate on the whole city and then multiplying by the 1,400 students, and that came out to about $3.1 million. So there's a kind of $2 to $3 million range of cost or impact to those services. I'm sorry. That was the important point that you wanted, wasn't it?
I think we are going to have to break by 6:25, so people have a bit to get
yes.
up there. If you can wrap, and then we'll see if there are any questions.
Yes, I'm sorry. I wanted to give you some detail about the metrics used to calculate these. So they are there in great detail, and any of these people, you can call me anytime. I'm sure any of them we'd be happy to respond to that too. I think they have been worked time and again, and we edited each other, and so I think they're reliable. And the consensus from this is really that you know Washington DU does some wonderful things, but they have both the resources, the intelligence, the everything else to really join with you and either financially and or through in-kind services take that to another level which will really help induce the kind of development that we want to see here to mitigate those costs. So that with just a few minutes left, can I answer any questions, or if you would like to ask any of the members questions, I'd be happy to do that too.
Okay, members of council, any questions? Mr. Crow?
Actually, mine's not a question. I've been on the council now virtually 8 years, and I've never seen the level of detail and balance in a report from a commission. So, I mean, I recognize that a lot of people on this commission came at this from a lot of different ways, and I appreciate the time and effort that this must have taken and putting together these conclusions and recommendations. I'm not exactly sure where we go from here, but just I, as one who represents a large part of the territory where WashU is and where a lot of faculty members live and students live, would be remiss if I did not say to all of you that this is an impressive piece of work, and I thank you very much for your time and dedication in putting it together.
Well, it was a pleasure. It was a labor of love. The people here genuinely care about their city. I think it is an exceptional city. There is no boulevard like Del Mar with the marvelous canopy of London plane trees and the historic architecture and so on anywhere else. Lindell and a couple other places compare, but this is an exceptional city. We're one of the few places where people of different races and nationalities and religions and everything else live together pretty well. We actually, for the most part, pretty much like each other. And this is something that one should be able to market, to invite, to use, to elevate the city and bring the kind of financial development that will mitigate Washington DU's presence.
Mr. Sharp?
I want to echo Mr. Crow's comments and say that I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do to implement some of the things that you have suggested to us, but did an outstanding, absolutely marvelous job.
Thank you. Well, and to our members too. It was a labor of love. The people seated here and the others that are not here this evening, a lot of people couldn't make a 5:30 meeting, but everybody has a minimum of 200-300 hours in, some of us 500-600 hours in. If we sent you a bill at our professional rates, you'd have to pass a bond issue to pay us, So.
Mr. Glicker?
Gary, can you weigh in on what you alluded to earlier, parallel properties, and either you or some of your fine staff behind you kind of share where you see, and on a visionary standpoint, parallel properties going? And for those of that don't know what I'm talking about, that's the for-profit arm of Washington U, quadrangle and parallel. And I'm seeing in the loop, rather, I think in a good way, they are taking some of those properties away from quadrangle and putting it on the market through parallel properties. And then my second question is to the city manager, and that is, who is our liaison point person with Washington U Intergovernmental Affairs?
I don't know much more about parallel properties than what we've researched here. There are changing market conditions. I know that a number of properties, the last time the calculations were done in the subcommittees, were back in May. And since then, there have been some rises in property values, partially because of coming out of the recession, but partially simply because the limited amount of private property, owners have discovered they can charge things that are closer to dorm rates. I wasn't aware of, you know, but...
Sure. Yeah, I think the motivation is to take advantage of historic tax credits. And the motivation seems to be to put them back on the private rolls to take advantage of historic tax incentives as they rehabilitate the properties. After 5 years, a five-year holding period, they can become tax exempt again. So if they may be doing that and more of it, and it would be good if they did, because I think you need the revenue.
And maybe I'll just add that WashU has been quite confidential about its plans, and the presentation committee did not go into great detail, even in follow-up questioning, about their future property plans, even about within the tax-exempt and taxable portfolios. So that would be an issue which could be raised in city versus and university conversations. They have moved several million dollars in the past year worth of property into the taxable category, about $4 million, and slowly rising. And their motivations, as Steve Stone mentioned, are partially tax credit, maybe also sustainable public opinion reasons for things that are being operated as business operations. So it is a substantial amount. A few percent of their holdings have been moved, and it could well be that a similar amount over the next few years, but that's an uninformed, at least data, not supported by data. It's just a guess.
I wanted to ask, has the committee noticed Washington University moving properties into the for-profit company and then after the five-year period moving them back out again? They have the ability to take advantage of the historic tax credits.
They have the legal right to do that.
But have you noticed that they've done it?
I think their involvement in taking property private, rehabilitating it, enjoying the tax benefits is something new, so we don't know what their next move is on these properties. And most of them have been single family or duplexes, as far as we can tell.
They did it with the exception of the Valley Fitness Center. They own that, and they put it in, took it out, so whichever is advantage for them, they would do that, but we don't get noticed. But I mean, they now put it on the road and take it off at their whim.
I wanted to say, and I'll be real quick, that I was impressed with this report also. I was afraid it was going to be some WashU bashing because I'm a WashU grad, but numbers don't lie. It was some good work, and it does portray a picture. There's some possibilities for work.
Thank you all so much.
Mr. Decker?
Question to the city manager, please.
Yeah. Our director of community development, Andrea Ruganti.
One last thing, and I apologize if I missed it in here. Did the committee, just in background study, do anything to look at how much money was put into, say, Parkview Gardens when they were renovating the buildings years ago to put them into student housing, and how that impacted the increased property tax value in the loop? I know I saw one line of that, but I wonder, did you go into any detail on that?
Well, the most detail, there's two good charts on tangible and intangible values, which Christine worked very hard on, that should cover, it break down the type of things I was telling you in much more detail. I'm not sure that that particular correlation's addressed, but...
Did they really claim $36 million in value for the trolley from themselves?
You know, that caught my eye, too. I only proofread this thing seven times, and after a while you don't see things anymore. So that could, you know.
I think that's a little high for their I mean, that might be what the, that's less than the trolley itself, but I'm surprised that WashU would have claimed that they had provided all that value. Just a note.
I think okay. It was an
I think it is in that.
Is it in the by the numbers?
I would like to see, if I could, the by the numbers document itself.
Oh,
I know
sure.
It's throughout, but
glad
I'd like to share it with the city.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have to wrap now, and then you will have about 5 minutes at our council meeting to present the report formally.
Okay.
And I believe that's at the top of the city manager's report.
Okay.
So thank you, Mr. Nelling, and everyone who is here.
Thank
and I
you
see
all
Kristen
so much.
In the audience
it's,
also.
It's been an honor to have this role.
Thank you very much.
You know, we don't know. One thing we never found is how many counties.